Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, December 1st, 2011. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. With this week, Chris Colby, editor of Brew Your Own magazine, and I check out the results of our collaborative experiment on fermenter shape and composition. Does it matter what you use for a fermenter on the homebrew scale? Stay tuned to find out. If you're new to homebrewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And don't forget, our 2012 Brewers Logbooks are in the house and going out the door. So alert Santa Claus and get one for under your tree or in your stocking if you have big feet. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is Basic Brewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. We also have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video page on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us and click on our associate link first. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you this show, and we appreciate your support, especially during this busy holiday season, and you guys are wearing that thing out. So be sure to tell your significant others to buy your Christmas presents through the Amazon link on our site. And there's now an Amazon.co.uk link on there, too. And we definitely appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. Brew Your Own Magazine and Zymergy are excellent Christmas presents, subscriptions. You can now find our Basic Brewing iPhone and Android podcast apps on their respective stores, and we're on the BlackBerry podcast directory now, too. However, I got several emails from Android users who were looking for the Android app in the Android store, and they couldn't find it. And I appreciate you guys letting me know that there was something going on there. And I contacted the people who publish our apps, and I was told that there is an issue with the apps that they handle showing up in the Android store, and they're working to get that resolved. But in the meantime, if you get a new Android phone for Christmas or whatever, and you wanted to buy the Basic Brewing app, you can find our app, at least in the United States, on Amazon.com. Just search for Basic Brewing Android app on Amazon, and you should find it. And don't forget to click on our Amazon banner on BasicBrewing.com to take you to Amazon. Then you can search for our app and then. Okay. Ho, ho, ho. The reason for the season, right? We've gotten a good number of brewing, at least, you know, when you buy our stuff, you know, we won't get trampled or pepper sprayed. Anyway, we've gotten a good number of brewing disaster stories for our upcoming show on brewing disasters. And good news, the folks at Brew Hauler are sending us a goodie bag of prizes to give out to our favorite stores or to our favorite stories. I got stores on in the brain there. And I'm sure that we can pitch in some basic brewing stuff to make the pot a bit sweeter as well. Now, remember, Brew Hauler is the, we call it on our DVDs, we use it. You could see them, the Brew Hauler on our DVDs. We call it the strappy thing. but it's the thing that you can wrap around your carboy so that you got these handles, and you can that'll make it safer for you to carry and easier for you to carry around. And also, I saw on their Facebook page that they've got brew haulers for growlers, which is extremely cool. Anyway, Steve and I are planning to get together next Tuesday to record the show, so please get your stories in by Monday the 5th of December to make sure that they get here in time. And I'm looking forward to getting together with Steve and enjoying some fun stories. I got a couple of more notes on brewing software after our show on the topic. Mark in Providence, Utah writes, I enjoyed last week's podcast on brewing software. Thanks, Mark. I have given one piece of software that you mentioned, Beersmith, a try, but I found that because it tries to be all things to all brewers, it is not nearly as user-friendly as the quote-unquote brewing software I came up with a long time ago. This software, quotes, is a one-page Word document with embedded Excel sheets for doing the various calculations that I need during the brewing process. The reasons I like using this over generic software are as follows. Number one, it is tailored to my equipment and procedures for brewing. Number two, it is easily modified as I change my equipment and processes. And number three, it's all in one page. And number four, that page can be printed out as a report for archival purposes. Very cool. If you're a whiz with Excel and you know all the formulas that they use in the software, applications and such, you can do what Mark did and just kind of make your own in either in Excel or embed those Excel cells on a Word document. Very cool. Dan writes in with this. I have one addition to make that wasn't covered on the podcast, although it is not actually a piece of software designed for brewing. The app is for the iPhone, and it is called Convert Units. The app can convert between just about any measurement and imaginable. Oh, any measurement imaginable. Grams and ounces, pounds and kilos, gallons and liters, and has been used on every single one of my brew days. Every single one of my brew days. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate you guys writing in with those additions to the software apps show. Okay, if you look out on the Basic Brewing video feed, you will see Steve Wilkes doing a triangle test in connection with the collaboration experiment that we're going to talk about today. I poured three samples of the Belgian beer that I brewed for the experiment, two from one half of the batch and one from the other, and Steve attempts to discern between the two. If you have time, you may want to check that video out before you listen to the interview with Chris. It's not necessary, but the audio interview that you're about to hear has a spoiler that will tell you the outcome of the test on the video. The video is only like 9.5 minutes long, something like that. You can see that, as usual, on our RSS feed, or I've been posting our videos on youtube.com/basicbrewing. Just a handful of folks have found our videos there, that is, if you know, sometimes it's easier to look at stuff on YouTube than to download the full resolution stuff. So you may want to check that out. One more note before we get into my chat with Chris. We had one additional entry that came in after we recorded our interview. So I have used the wonders of editing to insert that data into the show. Chris Colby, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hey, James. Thanks for having me on the show.
Now, we're here to talk about our latest collaborative experiment, and I don't even remember what number we're at. Was it 9 or something, or 8 or 9 or 10, or it's a bunch?
Let's say 9.
Okay, 9. 999.
999.
Now, what are we talking about this time?
We're talking about our experiment to determine whether the fermenter type affects your beer. Not just an idea at the commercial level, but there's actual the fact at the commercial level that changes in their fermenter configurations can lead to changes that they can taste in the beer. For example, if a company was used to using sort of shallow open fermenters and they switch to a taller cylindrical conical fermenter, that can affect the flavors of the beer. And, you know, if a company is changing to that, they have to work on reformulating their recipe, reformulating their process to address those changes. And so some homebrewers have read up on, or know enough about commercial brewing that they know that at the commercial scale, changing your fermenter shape changes the beer's profile. And, you know, some people have speculated, well, maybe at a home level, you know, different shaped fermenters would make a difference too. And one criticism of that, however, is that when you, on a commercial scale, when you shift from a more shallow fermenter, whether it's open or not, to an upright fermenter, you know, the pressure at the bottom of a tall, thin fermenter is just enormous. Whereas no matter what shape your fermenter is at a homebrew scale, the amount of pressure at the bottom is, even if you have a very tall, thin, like you're fermenting in a corny keg, you know, the pressure at the bottom isn't really significantly different than that on the top, because there's just not that much weight of beer on top of it. So our idea was to design a quick experiment to see, does fermenting in different fermenters, say, you know, the popular choices for homebrewers are buckets or carboys, or sometimes, you know, homebrew scale cylindrical conicals, you know, does your fermenter type make a difference? And so we asked BYO readers and Basic Brewing listeners to make a batch of beer, you know, maybe 10 gallons of beer, split it, you know, evenly, try to get the troob, you know, the debris at the bottom of the kettle, evenly distributed, or lose it entirely. So anyway, the wort that goes into the two fermenters were as close to the same as possible, aerate the same, pitch with the same amount of yeast, and then taste your beer side by side. Or as I'm eventually going to do, I've got a cylindrical conical fermenter, so I'm going to try that, a glass carboy, and a bucket, which will add to the article when it comes out, but I don't have the results for that yet. And anyway, that was basically our experiment. Does homebrew fermenter type affect your beer? And interestingly, there's a couple different components to it, because not only are they slightly different shapes, but they're also different materials.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, plastic, glass, and so fermenter, the single variable we have is fermenter type, but within that variable there are sub-variables, you know, and composition being the material composition being the most salient, I guess would be the word.
And I brewed two batches of beer for this one. I did two rounds. The first was a Belgian amber, what I'm calling a Belgian amber. 10 pounds of Belgian pills, 4 pounds of malted wheat, 1 pound of amber Belgian candy syrup, added 30 minutes into the boil, and 1.5 ounces of Styrian Goldings at 60 minutes. And I used White Labs 550 yeast, which is a Belgian yeast. My starting gravity was 1061, and the final gravity in both the glass and the plastic was 1008. And what I did was I brewed up five gallons of wort, and I racked that from the kettle into the glass carboy, and I pitched my yeast into the carboy. I made a starter, pitched the yeast into there, swirled it all up so that the troob and the yeast was evenly distributed, and just racked half of that into plastic bucket so that there would be no differences in you know, how I racked it from the kettle or the amount of yeast that was pitched in each. You know, it was completely even that way. And the second beer that I brewed was what I'm calling an American mild. 10 pounds of two-row, 10.5 ounces of 20 Lovibond Crystal, 7.5 ounces of Cara Vienna, and 1 ounce of chocolate malt. Started out at 1047. I did a 1/2 ounce of Magnum at 60 minutes, 1/2 ounce of Cascade at 30 minutes, and 1/2 ounce of Styrian Goldings at 5 minutes. And I used Saffale 04 for that one. And I did the same treatment of the wort, you know, putting it all in the carboy, stirring it up, and then racking half off. The only thing is that I pitched dry yeast into the fermenters after that, an equal amount into each after that. So two different beers. One was a 7% alcohol by volume, and one was 4.9% alcohol by volume. And what I did was I did a triangle test with the Belgian beer. We shot this triangle test for an episode of Basic Brewing Video, which will come out about the same time that you're hearing this. So you can actually see Steve Wilkes go through the triangle test and make his determination out of that, and whether he could tell the difference between the two batches. Because basically what I did was I poured two cups of one and one of the other and tried to see if he could pick those out. And he actually did. He was able to pick out the one that was different. And here we recorded an audio interview afterwards. And here's what Steve had to say. Well, Steve, welcome to the studio.
Thank you, James.
And we just finished shooting a couple of episodes down in the kitchen, Basic Brewing video episodes in the kitchen. One was the triangle test.
Yes.
Comparing the Belgian beer. Half was fermented in the plastic bucket, half was fermented in the glass carboy. And with the triangle test, you were able to pick out the one that was different.
Yes, it really wasn't hard at all. The first thing I did was smell all three beers, and they definitely smelled different. I wasn't quite sure at first. I mean, I knew there was a difference, and I definitely identified the two that I thought were the same. It turned out I was right, but I was a little unsure of myself. And then as I tasted the three beers, I mean, I guess I'll just say at every turn, I always picked the right. I wasn't confused.
Mm.
I wasn't real sure of myself a little bit, but I always, yeah, that's the different one. Yeah, that's a different one. And I want to say that I felt like the beers that were fermented in the glass were better. They seemed to be more robust. They seemed to have a stronger character in every direction in the right way. Mm. So I felt like they were a little more sugar. You could really taste the Belgian candy sugar. They were a little more malty. They had a little more backbone. The one in the plastic I thought was a little less of all that. Now, it was a good beer.
Mm.
And had I not had the two to compare, I'm sure I would have been perfectly happy with the other. But when I compared the two, I definitely preferred the beer that was in the glass carboy.
So did you pick up any off flavors?
No.
Either one of them?
No, in neither beer. I didn't feel like either beer had a flaw in that sense. I didn't get any kind of, say, plasticky flavor from the plastic. I didn't get anything like that. It just seemed like it was just ever so slightly, and I do mean slightly, but ever so slightly a little waterier, a little thinner. It didn't have the big bouquet, especially in the nose. I really noticed that the two beers that were done in the glass just had a really good, strong Belgian nose.
Huh.
And the one done in the plastic didn't.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
Yeah, I was impressed that you were able to pick out the odd one out of the three. We kind of put you on the spot.
Well, and I took the challenge. I was a little worried. I was worried that I wouldn't be able to get it. And although that wouldn't have been anything wrong with that either, because it would have told us that if my palate was true, that there wasn't any difference between the two methods.
Right.
Now, I do want to say that I don't think this means you shouldn't use a plastic bucket.
Right.
I don't want people to infer that. I don't even know where I'm going with that. But I mean, I use plastic buckets all the time. And I use carboys all the time. But I've never had this side-by-side like this. I don't know. I mean, maybe.
There are plenty of reasons to use a plastic bucket.
Yeah.
And there are plenty of reasons to use a glass carboy.
Mm-hmm.
In this particular instance, in this particular beer, it seems like the glass fared better. I've got another set of beer, kind of a what I'm calling an American mild.
Okay.
Which may be an oxymoron. But we may have another opportunity.
I think that'd be great because that's one thing I was wondering about was, what would it be like with a different category of beer?
Well, there you go.
So,
thanks, Steve.
Thank you, James.
Okay, now Steve had he could pick out fairly easily the odd man out on that triangle test, and you tasted the beers last night, Chris. And were you able to make that clear a differentiation between the plastic and the glass? In the Belgian samples.
Yeah, I poured out the samples and I tasted them, and I did taste some differences in both cases, but I think I might have ruined the experiment in that when I poured them out, what I should have done, and in retrospect I don't know why I didn't do this, but I should have poured like half a glass or a quarter of a glass because the beers were bottle conditioned, and just avoided, you know, any possibility of getting yeast sediment from the bottle conditioning into the glass. But in both cases, I managed to get one of the beers, in both cases it was the first one of the pair, to have a little more yeast sediment than the others because I poured out a full glass. And so I detected differences in the beer, but a lot of them, or almost all of them, were ones that I would associate with just having some yeast. One thing on the one possible difference I did pick up on the American Mild, in the glass one, I thought there was the level of like banana esters was just as like a smidge higher. And that might have, again, that might be straight from having yeast in, but I thought there was a little more aroma to that one. Otherwise, you know, I thought the differences were fairly small. You know, it came just down to me thinking that, well, I just got a little bit extra yeast in this one. And I also, I mean, I didn't really look as carefully as I should have in retrospect for color changes. But they looked, you know, sitting on my desk in front of me, they looked, the colors looked comparable in both pairs.
Now, I did a triangle test. I had my wife set up a triangle test, a blind triangle test for me with the American Mild last night. And you know, my calling it an American Mild is my determination. It's not meant to fit in the official BJCB guideline of, you know, what they consider to be a mild. That's just my nomenclature. Anyway, it's my disclaimer. Yeah. Just in case you brew it and say, wait a minute, this is nothing like a mild. So anyway, I did the blind triangle test last night, and I couldn't pick out the – I picked the wrong one. I couldn't pick the odd man out on the triangle test of that. So I think that the at least that recipe was closer than the Belgian together. And this morning, as we were talking, I poured out two samples of the Belgians, and looking, comparing the glass carboy against the plastic bucket. And I can taste a very subtle difference between the two. You know, this isn't a triangle test, it's just the two cups side by side. But it looks to me that the glass carboy sample is a couple of shades darker than the plastic bucket, and I'm just wondering if that's an indication that maybe I, you know, accidentally oxidized the glass carboy sample a little more than the plastic bucket. I mean, what would cause, you know, kind of a darkening of the beer like that?
Well, a couple different things. One, as you say, oxidation will darken the beer. And the second being, if the beer is just clearer, you know, small particles, you know, in suspension, like, you know, especially like a colloidal suspension, will reflect light a little bit. And, it, you know, if the clarity, if one looked more cloudy and it's lighter, that might be just the things in suspension.
That's a point. The plastic bucket one might be a tinge more cloudy, but not much. But it's not to say that the beer fermented in the plastic bucket was was bad at all. It's still a tasty beer. It's just that I think Steve and I both had a preference for the sample from the glass carboy. And I guess we have to, you know, we have to be sort of suspicious or skeptical of the results whenever we do a one-off, right?
Yes.
Whenever we have a, you know, we cannot make global determinations on this one round of the experiment that, you know, when using White Labs 550 yeast, always use a glass carboy over the plastic bucket. You'll get better results.
Yeah. In any case, like in this case, you had one bucket and one carboy, and there was differences between the two. And, you know, to say that the differences were due to the experimental variable there is hard to say, because it could have been any difference in any respect. That, you know, one could have been slightly more sanitized than the other. One could have been, you know, you could have accidentally just in the handling oxidized one more, that kind of thing. And that's of course one of the reasons why we do the collaborative experiments, to get, you know, multiple people doing the same experiment, and we look for, you know, in what one individual gets might not be a story, but if everyone got the same result, like let's say everybody said, hey, the beer I brewed in the glass turned out darker colored, you know, that's a result, because mm-hmm. it consistently showed up that way.
Yeah, it could be that I just racked more of the yeast over from the bucket than the carboy, maybe, or in bottling. There are all kinds of different variables.
As a single experimenter, the way you could address that was split a single batch into four different replicates, have two in the glass carboy, two in the bucket, and then if the ones in the glass looked equally dark and the ones in the carboy looked equally light, or I'm sorry, the one in the buckets looked equally light, then that's stronger evidence of the real difference there. Mm-hmm. Although you could also argue that maybe it was, you know, two flukes, and then you expand it to six beers, and you know, that's why in you know, real science, not two guys sitting around drinking beer science, they do multiple replicates of things, and then there's also, you know, statistics that you would test to see how likely your results were originated due to chance, or how what's the likelihood that you can rule out that they're the results were due to chance.
Now, speaking of our collaborators.
collaborators.
I'm making up words. it's a 7%, sipping the 7% beer. It's taking away 93% of my intellect. we got some collaborators with our experiment. Now, this is that we only had a couple of submissions from this experiment, and I think that there may be a couple of things at play here. We were doing this experiment so that it was due around the holidays, which is a distraction. And also, I gotta think that, this is just a wild guess on my part, but I would just wonder if the brewers out there who might have participated were kind of thinking that this was a foregone conclusion, that they had some sort of bias on the results, and they didn't feel it was interesting to them to participate. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be that. I never got the experiment notice posted to my blog, which, you know, at least hopefully, I think some people read my blog. We will have one more by the time the article comes out. We will have one more collaborator, because I've got everything I need to do the experiment, just not the I haven't had the weekend to be able to do it, or not the whole weekend, but a day, and hopefully that day will come this week.
And I want to run another round of the Belgian experiment. Number one, because I like that beer.
there's the main reason to do it. That was good beer.
So were the beers tasty, by the way?
Yeah, they kept me up till late at night. I completely forgot we were doing this the podcast in the morning, and I can't drink beer in the morning, or else the rest of my day is, you know, just sitting around me going, you know, go play video games. And I need to get stuff done. So it was midnight when I cracked the beers and I poured them, and you know, I went through and looked at the foam levels and the, you know, clarity, and then, you know, tasted them or smelled them and you know, tasted them for how was the malt, how was the hops, how was the balance, you know, blah blah blah. And then I was like, I didn't really detect much except for what I thought were my pouring errors. And then I was like, hey, these are pretty good. And so I sat around and I actually drank all four beers. And then it was late. And then I was like, oh, why did I do that?
Well, that's I'll take that as a compliment. That I've ruined.
Yeah, they were. They were actually very good.
They ruined your evening and your morning. But I think I'm going to do another round of the Belgian because there was a perceived difference, at least with me and Steve, between the beers, and it would be interesting to see if I could replicate that with the exact same recipe. You know, the temperature in the basement is not going to be the same, but maybe I can move them up into, you know, one of the spare bathroom or something.
An interesting related experiment that a member of my homebrew club, Scott Wells, suggested to me was that, according to him, he reads one of those online homebrew forums, and according to the brewers who write in there, there's some people who think that fermenting a homebrewed Hefeweizen in a carboy versus a wide shallow fermenter, and I don't know what they're using as a wide shallow fermenter, affects the aroma properties of the, because that sort of on a commercial level, a lot of wheat beer producers have the stone squares or the open sort of squares, and there it was, of course, the other added variable in addition to shape is open fermentation versus not. So that would also be an interesting one to do sometime for from a participation standpoint, I wonder how many brewers would be, fairly worried about conducting an open, open fermentation.
Right. Well, let's go over the entries. We got, an entry from, Brian Davis and Justine Jaspers in Lyle, Minnesota. They brewed an American Brown Ale, a Moose Drool clone, original gravity 1054, using Saf Ale US05. They brewed 10 gallons of all grain and split it into a 7-gallon stainless conical and a 6.5-gallon glass carboy, Saf Ale US05 and 90 seconds of O2. The two fermenters were placed side by side in Justine's basement, and the finished beer was kegged and carbonated at Brian's. I asked, what differences, if any, did you see visually? He said, absolutely no difference in any of these. Head retention, head volume, color, clarity, etc. What differences, if any, did you detect in the aroma? In a triangle test, no one in our club, the Iowa Minnesota Society of Brewers, IMNSOB.
Nice.
No one could pick the odd beer. So I would say no difference here. I guess it's Brian writing in, says, as long as I'm mentioning our club, we started at Worth Brewing in Northwood, Iowa, not long after your interview with Peter. So that's your cousin, right?
Yeah, like second cousin or something like that.
But, well, there you go.
Yes, Peter Austin's relative of mine.
I said, what conclusions can you make following the experiment? Brian says, I would say that at our level, the shape of the fermenter really doesn't have enough impact to worry about. I'm happy to say this because they don't give away those conicals. So at least a validation that the conical, at least was equal to the glass carboy in performance there. So that was cool. They did triangle tests at the homebrew club, and they couldn't pick out the odd man out there. Zod O'Connor, our buddy up in Redmond, Washington, or Seattle, the Seattle area, he says for his location, he says home of the next NHC. So,
wow,
I'm looking forward to that.
Is that confirmed?
Oh yeah, it's going to be in Seattle next year.
Wow.
And then Philadelphia after that, I believe. He brewed a Cascadian Dark Ale with a SO4. Zot brewed a simple CDA, he says, a 5-gallon batch, split half of the wort into a 6-gallon glass carboy and a 7-gallon plastic bucket. So what I did, basically. Original gravity was 1079. Final gravity was the same. glass carboy might have been 0.005 higher than the plastic. That might have been due to eyeballing this second yeast packet. So he basically he says he kind of estimated the he carefully hydrated the first packet, and then efficiency hit 96%. He said using a new sparging technique for brewing a bag. So under time pressure, I eyeballed the second packet and split it between fermenters. So he needed to add more yeast, but he eyeballed adding the equal amount of yeast between the two. Visually, he detected no difference. Aroma, none. And what conclusions can you make following the experiment? Zott says that fermenting for a month in glass or plastic made little difference. Here's the entry that was received after Chris and I recorded that interview. Will from Columbus, Ohio, brewed an American brown ale. It was a 12-gallon all-grain batch split evenly between a 6.5-gallon glass carboy and two corny kegs, 3 gallons each, combined after fermentation. Batch sparged, all proper cleaning and sanitation, all closed and CO2 flushed transfers post-brew day. Y-Yeast 1332 Northwest Ale Yeast with starter split evenly. The beer fermented in the carboy cleared faster, Will says. No other variation in visual differences. In the aroma, slight smoky phenolics came across in the carboy beer, which is not present in the corny fermented beer. Interesting. And what conclusions can Will make after the experiment? None, he says. This is only one result and cannot statistically be used to draw a conclusion. The beers were not compared by non-BJCP judges. The differences are slight, so they may not be noticeable to all. Very interesting. Very slight differences. But as Will says, this is a one-off experiment, and so he says that he can't draw any conclusions. Very interesting. I appreciate your submission, Will. And now, back to the past. So there you go. You know, our respondents in the field said there wasn't a difference even between, you know, a conical and a glass carboy or a glass carboy in a bucket. And then one of my batches, you know, we determined that there wasn't a difference. So the only I keep saying odd man out. I'm going to leave that alone. But anyway, the only batch that did exhibit an apparent difference was the Belgian of mine using White Labs 550 between the glass carboy and the plastic bucket. So I think that's grounds for me to do that again to see if it was just a fluke somehow or if there's actually something to it.
Wouldn't it be nice if we had an experiment where something happened? It just seems like the last couple. I mean, they've been fun experiments and worthwhile, but we get to the end and like, no, it doesn't matter.
We haven't found the Higgs boson particle.
I think our experiment with the biggest like difference was the difference in tasting glasses. I remember those people predicted, or not predicted, but people reported a strong
right
difference in that.
Right.
But everything else we've done has seemed to have been...
Well, we did discover that leaving your beer on the primary yeast for a couple of weeks extra didn't ruin the beer, which I guess having no result there was kind of an important result.
Yeah, that's true. In the yeast pitching one, we found that the more yeast you pitch, the quicker it started, which was not. But we also found that the taste differences weren't that pronounced. You know, we sort of expected that the lower and lower the pitching rate got, the more estery and like less fermented it would get, but they all sort of fermented to the same.
Yeah.
So interesting.
Yeah. we need to design an experiment, you know, something dramatic. You know, we'll letting your dog lap up some of your wort before you shut the fermenter.
Will that
affect?
We'll have one ferment in a bucket outside sitting on your lawn for a week versus, yeah, a normal carboy.
A result, yeah.
Well, it rained a lot here, so.
I got an inch more wort in the open bucket.
And I'd have to say that the bug content was significantly higher than my outside fermented beer.
We had some extra protein in there. There were significantly more drunk neighborhood children. On the
more than usual, even.
Oh, so are these results the results that I got and the results that Brian and Justine and Zot got? How are they going to affect your experiment design, or are they?
What I'm going to do is, I mean, now that going into it, I sort of expect no result. The thing I'd like to do is try to brew a beer that is light enough in flavor and color that, you know, any sort of small difference could be picked out. And then, of course, if there is a difference, I'll need to repeat the experiment a couple weeks later. So I think what I'm going to do, and just also because I've been just wanting to try a full-on cereal mash for a while, is I've got 10 pounds of rice at home, and I think I'm going to make essentially sort of like a cream ale, except cream ale you usually do a cereal mash with corn, but do a sort of, you know, a very light wort, just a blend of 2-row and 6-row, you know, both domestic for their diastatic power, about, you know, I don't know, 20 to 25%, just plain old rice as the adjunct. Make a very light colored wort, lightly hopped, you know, maybe not, you know, cream ale lightly hopped, but, you know, keep that balanced and at a low enough level that any differences can be detected in you know, other aspects like yeast and that. And just try to, just try to make sure that, you know, all three fermenters are obviously, you know, sanitized to the same degree and as much as humanly possible. Try to make sure that the wort is equally clear going into each one of them. And basically, you know, just I hope I end up with 15 gallons of beer that I actually enjoy drinking.
And you can send me some and ruin my evening as far as overindulging drinking your samples.
I need to ruin one of your evenings sometimes.
Now, what are you thinking on yeast? Are you going to go the liquid route or are you going to go dry?
I don't know. If I have the time to make a nice big yeast starter, I'll go with some liquid yeast, probably, you know, White Yeast 1056 or White Labs WLP-001, you know, the Chico, quote-unquote, mm-hmm. strain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll just take a 3-gallon carboy and just, you know, make a big yeast starter out of that. And then, pour off the supernatant and swirl the remaining stuff and put it in maybe, you know, a sanitized measuring cup so I can dollop out the same amount, you know, stir each time, pour a couple cups into one fermenter, stir it, pour it, so that, you know, the same amount of the same pitch gets in there. You know, one thing, if you pitch three different packets of yeast, there's always a possibility that one of them, you know, is 2 months older than the other one or something. You know, it's not likely. You know, if you buy three of them at your homebrew shop, it's likely they were from the same lot and they have had the same treatment along the way, but there's still potential differences there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, hope to make a big starter and split it into three.
But you could, even if you're using dry yeast, you could mix three packets together if you do it, you know, in a sanitary way and measure out, you know, weigh out the mixture there.
I could also, and this is a little weird, but I mean, it might work for the experiment, is I just got a empty 55-gallon drum, thanks to member of my homebrew club. Thanks, Kevin Glenn. I could sanitize the 55-gallon drum, run off the 15 gallons of wort in there, pitch it, aerate it, you know, let it sit for just long enough to, you know, make all that wort the same, and then portion it back into the three fermenters so that the wort is, you know, sort of exactly the same. You know, at the very least, so it'll settle out some trub, maybe.
Well, that'll be interesting to see, you know, how yours turns out. And, you know, you could get the zealots down there to help you do triangle tests and such.
I could. I'm betting I could.
Yeah. I'm sure they'd be reluctant to drink your beer, but you could probably twist their arms.
Well, their beer is all being brewed at commercial breweries now, that since everyone in the club is either a turning professional or winning contests and having their beer brewed by Sam Adams or local pubs or...
the former homebrewers.
Not everybody in the club has turned professional, but wow, we've got a lot of breweries opening up in Austin, and more people like discussing it and discussing it seriously. So,
well, that's good. We've got some activity up here in Northwest Arkansas as well. So,
really,
we've got a brew pub that's finally brewing beer up here, the West Mountain Brewing Company over on the square in Fayetteville. We've got Tanglewood Branch, which is right now just a really cool pub, and he's got his back room all fitted out, you know, to become a brewery, but that's still in the works. And then there's a Core Brewing, which is, I believe, going to be a production brewery up here. So I need to do some episodes with those guys and see how that's going. And we'll basically almost double the amount of professional breweries in the state just up here in Washington County. So good things are happening.
Yeah, here in Austin, the South Austin Brewing was – I was just there recently, and I actually brewed a test batch with their brewer. And they were like weeks away from getting started. And of course earlier, it's now been a couple of years, the Black Star Brewing opened up here. There's a Austin Brewing and there's a Circle Brewing and there's a Thirsty Goat or something, or I don't even know what all the new breweries are right now. And there's a brew pub that's also a movie theater.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. There's just a bunch of beer stuff going on in Austin.
Yeah, I heard an interview with, I think it was Joel Hodgson, the founder of Mystery Science Theater. He was talking about going to a brew pub down there that was a movie theater. So it's getting talked about, it sounds like.
Wow.
Well, that's our off-topic rant for the day. I think it's still of interest. It's still on beer. I've got my little sample here left in the cup. I've combined the two. I've just got a little bit left. I'm gonna sip this, and then I'm gonna go to lunch with my wife. So there. So it'll be a good lunch. So I appreciate your time, Chris, and I look forward to your results. And we need to get together and figure out what the next experiment's going to be.
We do.
Well, all righty. Well, you have a good rest of the week.
Okay. I'll talk to you later, James.
Well, thanks again to Chris and to those who have sent in data for the experiment. If you sent in data and didn't hear it on the show, which has happened in the past, unfortunately, please send me an email to let me know, and I'll read your data on the next show and make sure that Chris has it for the article. And by the way, if you click on the Brew Your Own magazine link on basicbrewing.com, that banner there, you'll get a free issue of the magazine. And if you decide to subscribe after reading that, and you should, you'll be helping to support this podcast. And we appreciate everybody who's done that. And I'm looking forward to the follow-up experiment. I'm going to redo the Belgian to see if it still tastes different between the two containers. And I'm looking forward to Chris's examples as well. Don't forget, Monday, December 5th is the deadline to submit your brewing disaster stories, and we'll be giving away some prizes to our favorites. So if you've got a fun, scary, whatever story, brewing disaster, drop us a line. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site, along with our Brewer's Logbook, which is now available to order. We've got combo deals to save you a couple of bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time on our store. You can check out our shirts in the store, too. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support. You guys are wearing that thing out. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Hippos Go Berserk and Lego Mindstorms NXT 2.0, which I might have mentioned before, but that is a cool toy. Actually, I bought that for myself and my sons a couple of years ago, and we built cool robots for that. And one more because it's the holiday season, and why not? From the UK link, Nourishing Traditions, the cookbook that challenges politically correct nutrition and the diet dictocrats. Very interesting. Who knew that food would become political, but it has. But I like the line, one of the lines, it's something like, all fat isn't bad for you, or, some fat is good for you, or, I like a bit of fat in my food every now and then, a little bit, everything in moderation. How far can I go down a bunny trail? Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping, and we appreciate your support. Don't forget that you can also join the American Homebrewers Association or subscribe to a Brew Your Own through the associate links. But that's all. Until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by our buddy Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.